Welcome to the All Souls Forum here on KKFI. I'm your host, Christina Frazier. Over the last few years, I've noticed a lot of new luxury high-rise apartments in Kansas and Missouri. I've wondered how developers could build so much luxury housing in wealthy neighborhoods when I keep hearing news stories about the desperate need for affordable housing in poor and middle-class communities. Tonight on All Souls Forum, Patrick Tuohy of the Show Me Institute may have the answer, the misuse of TIF, or tax increment financing. Originally created to help finance and incentivize building in blighted areas to attract jobs and commerce, Tuohy will discuss many local examples where TIF has been used to help developers avoid paying taxes and siphon away funds from city infrastructure, local police, schools, and other civic necessities, leaving taxpayers to fit the bill. This show was recorded on December 27th at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church here in Kansas City, Missouri. Our show's format begins with our speaker's presentation, followed by a short break, and then concludes with the question and answer part of the program. Thanks for tuning in. Now let's join the conversation here at 90.1 FM, KKFI.
Forum was started to essentially present topics of the day, from controversial topics or any topic of interest, to promote critical thinking in the city. It was about somewhat 6 or 8 months ago that Linda Vogel Smith, bought an opportunity to have a forum, and she wanted to have someone from other than the progressive liberals that we've tended to listen to. Today, we are really fortunate to have Patrick Tuohy, the director of municipal policy from the Show Me Institute, promoting responsible market solutions for public policy, good government versus gimmickry. So,
thank you very much. I am grateful for the invitation and the opportunity to speak with you today. And I understand this will soon be broadcast on KKFI, so I will try to be as descriptive as possible in my talking, because I understand the listeners won't be able to see my slideshow. And I will also commit to making sure that all the materials I discuss today are on our website. And if you're listening on the radio, you can visit us at showmeinstitute.org, and everything we're discussing today will be there for you to look at. Let me start off with an introduction of the Show Me Institute. We are a nonprofit, nonpartisan 501c3 educational organization. We are generally described as libertarian, but certainly I think we are fans of the free market, and oftentimes just want to demonstrate to people that there are solutions to statewide and municipal problems that don't necessarily require the intervention and action of government. Sometimes we are far too eager to ask ourselves, what can government do? And oftentimes, as we'll discuss this morning, government can only make things worse. We are oftentimes caricatured by our political opponents as being just against taxes. And that is absolutely untrue, of course, as you'll learn from today's talk. Taxing policy is very important in cities and states and in counties, and that money is necessary to provide the basic services that we all depend on. However, we recognize that some taxing policies are better than others, and all too often cities use a taxing policy that encourages people to leave, whether they move their business or move their homes or simply shop elsewhere. We are all familiar with the power of state line and how all the liquor stores are on the Missouri side as you drive down. In fact, I had a friend visiting the other day who commented that right by my house in Waldo, the Hy-Vee grocery store is on the Kansas side, but the Hy-Vee liquor store is across the street in Missouri. And that is because the way we choose to tax and the way we choose to regulate creates incentives, and sometimes they're incentives we don't intend. So today I want to talk about economic development policies in Kansas City and around the state, and I've subtitled this The Tale of Three Cities, and those cities are Kansas City, St. Louis, and Joplin. I'll quickly go through Joplin because I think the opportunities for us this morning are really to talk about what's going on in Kansas City. And I think the short story, the overarching theme is that cities over the last 20 or 30 years have really been hurting. People are moving out to the suburbs. They want to own their own property. They want more space. And so, and this is not a unique to Kansas City. And so cities have been racing to try to figure out ways that they can incentivize people to move back. And sometimes I think they've tripped over their own feet. Sometimes they think they've made short-sighted decisions. But really, it's an attempt to grow. And unfortunately, in Missouri and around the country, the way language is written and the way policies allow cities to implement these economic development policies create the illusion that things are happening when, in fact, nothing really is. So first, I want to make the point that economic development is a big deal. According to Good Jobs First, which is a left-of-center pro-union organization, Missouri has just under 4,000 different development subsidies worth just under $6 billion. These are the subsidies we give from everyone to H&R Block, to Boeing, to everyone in between. We are ranked 10th in the dollar value of subsidies. Now, that's just dollar value. That's not per capita. We spend more on subsidies than California and Illinois. And part of that is because our legislative language in Missouri is particularly permissive, particularly broad. There are approximately 474 active TIF projects in Missouri, diverting more than $2.6 billion in would-be tax revenues. And the top recipients are some of the companies that we're familiar with in Kansas City: Cerner, H&R Block, and DST Systems. So let's talk a little bit about TIF. And the idea behind TIF isn't bad. States and cities recognize that there are parts of the urban area that remain economically challenged, we'll say, for years, decades sometimes. And governments say to themselves, well, how can we encourage people to invest? Well, the reason why businesses don't invest is because there's a great risk, right? They may spend a lot of money developing property, putting a headquarters or even a storefront in a place, and because people don't shop in that area, people are less likely to go, for example, to the east side for services and products. The business has a great deal of risk. And so the cities say to them, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take the increase in property value, the increase in the taxes you would pay as a result of you improving your property, and we're going to give that back to you to reduce your out-of-pocket cost, right? Everybody here who's a homeowner understands that when you make an improvement to your house, you not only pay for that improvement, but you also face the prospect of having higher taxes, and that's a disincentive. So it's not an unreasonable idea for government to kind of partner with business and say, we'll try to reduce risk. Of course, who depends on property tax? Schools, libraries, cities and towns depend on the revenue from that property tax. And so we have to realize that by creating this incentive, we are diverting away from those taxing jurisdictions money that they need to develop their service, to deliver their service. And so there's a cost-benefit analysis, and unfortunately, cities often don't think about what that cost is. By the way, the first TIF was used in California in 1952. By 2004, all 50 states had TIF, and in 2012, California became the first state to outlaw TIF, because it had been such a problem in their state. So again, the increment. So I'll use a chart here. So the time frame, we're going left to right. So we move a long time from left to right. And you'll see the blue at the bottom is, let's say it's a vacant lot. And they're assessed at a certain amount. And if nothing ever happens, the tax amount remains the same over time. It doesn't go up. A developer comes along and says, hey, I want to turn this into a headquarters or a shopping center or something like that. And as a result of that improvement, I know that the tax assessment on that piece of property will go up over time. And so that's the green triangle you see. And so what the city says is, okay, well, what we'll do is we'll freeze your tax rate for 23 years. The law says up to 23 years. Most of the time it's 23 years. We'll freeze it for 23 years, and although the assessment will go up over time, you won't have to, or we'll divert that back to you. So you pay it, and then the city gives it back to you. And at the end of 23 years, your assessment, you know, the taxing jurisdictions like schools and libraries will get this sudden jump in income. And so that's the chart shows that. And just an example here in Jackson County, here's an example of what property tax goes for. About 62% of the property tax goes directly to schools. 20% goes to the city of Kansas City, and then the remainder goes to libraries, mental health fund, things like that. So how TIF is approved. So you have to apply, if you're a developer and you want this TIF benefit, you go to the local TIF commission. We have one in Kansas City. There are, in Kansas City and St. Louis, I think there are 11 members, and state law allows that the mayor appoint six of those 11 members. If you are the school district, you have one vote. If you are the library, you have one vote. As you can imagine, if you are the school district and you oppose a TIF, it is really very difficult for you to win out. The Kansas City TIF Commission has its staff, right? So the people who kind of look at applications for TIF as the Economic Development Corporation of Kansas City. That is not a government agency. That is a 501c4 nonprofit. It is a lobbying organization, and they kind of do the paperwork for the applicant. They report to the TIF Commission whether or not they recommend a TIF be approved. If a TIF is approved, then it goes up to the City Council, and the City Council then has to approve it for it actually to take effect. The City Council is perfectly capable to approve or deny a TIF regardless of what the TIF Commission says. So we have a case recently in Columbia, and certainly more often in St. Louis, where the TIF Commission says we recommend against this, but the council goes ahead anyway. Incidentally, the Economic Development Corporation of Kansas City is funded through the fees collected by TIF, which I argue is the most base conflict of interest. In fact, years ago, the head of the EDC in Kansas City received a $25,000 bonus because they had approved so many TIF. What happened last year or the year before was the TIF Commission was so unhappy with the way in which their staff, the EDC, reported on their budgeting that now what happens is TIF funds go to the city, the city skims off a small percent to pay for accounting, and then the rest goes back to the EDC. So they've kind of put the city in the middle, but still, the EDC is funded by fees paid for people that they oversee. In order to get a TIF, in order to be granted a TIF, you have to demonstrate two things. The first is blight, and the second is a but-for analysis. Generally, you have to demonstrate, actually there are three ways of getting TIF: economic development, blight, and conservation area. TIF is, blight is commonly the route they go. And you have to demonstrate that the property is decrepit, falling apart. But the terms they use in law are meaningless. Steve Potter, who is the head of the Mid-Continent Library, which serves part of Jackson County, Clay, and Platte County, said in testimony years ago that under state law, the governor's mansion could be blighted, and he's absolutely correct. It is meaningless. You'll recall that Beth Shalom down at Warnell and 95th was blighted a few years ago, and the man who was in charge of that finding said it was the worst vandalism he had seen in 29 years. But who owned that property for the years it was falling apart? Well, it was Van Toyle, the developer who was going to get TIF to rebuild it. And by the way, what was Burns and Mack going to build on that site? They were not going to build a Jewish temple. They were going to build a world headquarters. Even if that building had been in pristine condition, they were going to bulldoze it. Vandalism had no bearing on what they were going to do with that space. But again, the law is so broad that you can go in and make these claims, and it meets the standards. The second is the but-for analysis. Basically, what that says is the developer says, this economic development would not happen but for public investment. Right? If the city doesn't give us money, this place will be vacant forever. The problem with that is the economic research on this in Kansas City, in St. Louis, in Chicago, all over the country says that absolutely is not true. In Kansas City, areas that are not TIFed grow just as fast as areas that are TIFed. If Burns and Mack needed a world headquarters next to their existing world headquarters, and it made sense for them, they were going to do it, whether the city of Kansas City gave them $42 million or not. Maybe they would have had a less impressive building or a slightly smaller garage, but they absolutely would have done it. And again, that's the story spelled out across Missouri. But because the standards for TIF are so low, cities just say, well, you've met the standards, we're going to give you the money. And by the way, the best part about the but-for analysis, and you will find these in TIF reports all over the state, they're often Exhibit D, I find, it requires an affidavit from the developer to say that, yes, TIF is necessary in order to support the but-for finding. So basically what we're doing is we're going to the person who's asking us for money and saying, are you sure you need this? And they say yes, and that meets the standard for TIF. So how TIF is used? This is really disturbing in Kansas City because we have such a ugly history of economic development and redlining and blockbusting. What we did was we took a map of Kansas City south of the river, and we used census information to divide neighborhoods into areas that are impoverished, where 30% or more of the population is living under the poverty line, and green areas, where 30% or greater of the population is in poverty, 30% or less. So again, you see where this is. And the white circles demonstrate the placement of TIF and the size of it. We are not using TIF as it was intended. We are putting it in the already wealthy parts of town. And that is because the standards for awarding TIF are so weak. The circles you see at the top of the map are the riverfront. They're using TIF to build those luxury apartments right there. And I can guarantee you that those areas, once developed, will immediately turn green and will not be welcoming to the people that TIF was meant to help. The east side, which has certainly seen decades of economic decline and stagnation, gets almost nothing. The same is true in St. Louis. If you are familiar with St. Louis, it is not very well familiar to me, but the story is largely the same. Economic development is put along Washington Avenue, the Central West End, which is a kind of a tony part of town, and North County, which has had decades of poverty, gets almost no TIF. I'll skim over this a little bit. Certainly after the hurricane, or the tornado, forgive me, hit Joplin, it was legitimately blighted. What you see on this map is a FEMA map. The red areas show the path of the tornado and the devastation. The city council created a TIF district that included all of that and then jogged up north, that is the downtown area of St. Louis, of Joplin, and created a TIF district, the 3,100 acres, I think, the biggest in state history. And what happened in Joplin is they did all their math, all their due diligence to figure out that, yes, we need TIF because it's blighted and we need to rebuild it. But what they did not consider in Joplin, they didn't include it into their calculations, were the $2.8 billion in insurance claims that would be used to rebuild Joplin. They just didn't think of it. What happened in Joplin is unique. The developer the city hired to do all this construction fell apart. The partners had a falling out. The company went away. The developers have built nothing. Yet in the 6 or 7 years since the tornado hit, the city has recouped all its assessed property loss. The population is larger than it was at the time, and none of that has anything to do with TIF. The point being, an economy like St. Louis or Kansas City or Joplin will rebuild and grow whether we subsidize it or not. Subsidies really just don't make a difference in the aggregate. The impact of TIF. So certainly some of the pictures here, these are all Kansas City. The plaza is blighted. I think in the early 90s the plaza was blighted. River Market is blighted. That is Burns and McDonald headquarters. So that area was blighted. It's a very nice neighborhood. That is the Power and Light District. Those were all considered blighted areas. And what happens, of course, is the taxes collected in that area don't go back to the city. When Mayor Barnes was spending all this money on the Power and Light District, she told us, she told Yael Abuhalka in an interview that we're going to be looked at as geniuses 10 years from now. But of course, what happened is the city did such a poor job of its math that I think even Troy Schulte, our current city manager, has said in order for the Power and Light District to work economically, we would need, I believe he said, we would need levels of Christmas shopping every weekend to make it work. As it works out now, the money we've spent there, we will continue to spend about $13 to $15 million a year through the year 2040 because the city agreed to cover the bond payments, right? We're going to give you a bunch of subsidies, private company, and you're going to borrow a bunch of money. And if you don't make enough profit to cover those debt payments, we'll put our money on the line. And shocker, that created an incentive, perhaps, for the Power and Light District, for Cordish, to let taxpayers shoulder some of the burden. So the cost to municipalities. Jackson County does an excellent job of tabulating these things. I'm very grateful to folks who work there who are able to answer our questions and get us information. That is not the case, I learned, across Missouri. So I couldn't provide similar numbers for every municipality. But between 2000 and 2016, the city of St. Louis redirected almost $800 million from TIF and abatement alone. In Kansas City, the amount just for 2015 was nearly $60 million. And that, again, doesn't include the $15 million each year for the Power and Light District. I think the school district in Kansas City is shorted about $25, $26 million a year because of all the various abatements in town. And so what's the impact? So one of my colleagues said, well, Patrick, let's look at a map years ago and compare it to a map today. We did that in St. Louis. And so you can see that, I won't say that TIF causes poverty, but there seems to be a lot more areas that are 30% or above under the poverty line than there were years ago. But the point is, when you look at economic development research, you can see that it does not have an impact. So this is one of my favorite charts. And there are two lines on the same chart, but they don't necessarily have anything to do with each other. Now, the blue line just shows the totality of assessed value in Kansas City, at least the part that falls in Jackson County. Again, Platt and Clay County, every time we ask them a question, they want thousands of dollars to answer. Jackson County is great. So no surprise there, right? Property value for all of Kansas City climbs. We hit a dip there around 2007, 2008. That was Kansas City kind of got hit in the economic downturn a little bit later, and our effects are lasting a little bit longer than the rest of the country, but that's no surprise. The red line is the percent of that assessed value that we are actually collecting in taxes. So what's happening is the red line is going down because although our property value, our aggregate property value for all of Kansas City is flat, because we are diverting it back to developers, right, we're collecting less of that money available to us. And you'll see that first drop in 2006, 2007. And what is that? That's H&R Block and the Power and Light District. We really gave away the show there and told a lot of developers they could keep money for up to 23 years. And so you see it every once in a while. I think 2011, 2012, we climbed up a little bit, but now we're kind of back off. And we're dropping again. And the point I make is we are hollowing out our tax base in Kansas City. Imagine this. You are visiting Kansas City, and you come and stay at our brand new convention hotel, which maybe someday will be built. The tax money you pay to stay at that hotel will not go to the city. You decide to walk down to the Power and Light District and have lunch. But the taxes you pay on your bill there will not go to the city. It will go back to the developers. Maybe you ride the streetcar to the River Market. Well, the streetcar is free. And River Market, the money you pay in taxes, will not go to the city. It will go back to developers. And we have great needs on police and basic infrastructure, and those needs are not being fed by our property tax. Imagine, for example, how this affects the school district. Let's say a developer comes in and says, I want to clear this group of land for a high-rise apartment building, right? We have that downtown. Or a housing development. But I want a subsidy, which freezes that land value, freezes the property value for 23 years. I'm going to build a bunch of stuff on it. But I'm going to build homes. I want to put families there, which increases the pressure on the school district because they've got to meet the need of those kids. But they're not seeing any increase in the taxes that support the services they deliver. And I think what's most galling in Kansas City is that we are building luxury high-rise apartment buildings. Taxpayers are subsidizing the construction of luxury high-rise apartment buildings in downtown Kansas City when our school district has 90% free and reduced lunch students. We are building buildings for rich people and ignoring the plight of our poor. And that is what got me started on TIF, because I think it is absolutely abhorrent. Here's an example of what happened in Joplin. So, of course, Joplin had had a hit to their property value, but the red line there shows when the tornado hit. And they dropped a little bit more as the county kind of caught up on assessments. And the developer wanted to lock in. They wanted the city council to sign the TIF agreement before December 31st in 2012. It's very important, they said, that you agree to this before the end of the year. And why was that? Well, you can read the Joplin newspapers to find out why. They pretty much told us. Because they knew that regardless of whether or not this TIF was introduced, people were already rebuilding in Joplin. And in that TIF district, property values were already starting to go up. But they wanted to lock it in before the next year, so before the assessments kick in. Because what was going to happen in Joplin? The green value was what they would capture, what would be diverted back to them. Because remember, TIF freezes property value. They want it frozen. They wanted it frozen at the lowest possible point. And they knew that if they didn't get the city council to sign off on TIF, they would lose some of that growth. So that's the story in Joplin. But of course, the developers aren't building all the things they promised people. That money is just being diverted away from schools. And Nicole Galloway did a great report of what happened in Joplin, and she found that the city often, the redevelopment folks that are collecting all the TIF funds bought a bunch of houses for more than they were worth. They bought them for too much, sold them for too little, didn't protect the city when it negotiated with these developers, and some of the property brokers were actually members of the Joplin City Council. So again, just an absolute mess. The long-term effect of TIF. So one of the challenges with TIF is that it lasts for 23 years. You know, the school district in Kansas City isn't necessarily against TIF, but they might say, can we do it for 5 years or 10? Do we really have to pay back these guys for 23 years? That's a real hit on schools. But like I said before, one of the results is that cities collect an increasingly lower percent of their land value, hollowing out their tax base. And the market is distorted. So here's the way I tried to describe it to the city council. What businesses do things that are smart, right? Or at least smart for business. And if they don't, they go out of business. It's very clear. But when a developer comes to a city and wants a subsidy, what they're saying is, boy, have we got a bad idea for you. This is an awful idea. But if you will make taxpayers the investor of first resort, it will become a good idea for us. Right? So the Hyatt or Lowe's or whoever's going to run the downtown hotel and Mike Burke, the developer, come to the city and say, I've got a bad idea. This doesn't make any business sense. But if you give us tens of millions of dollars, it will make business sense for the private developers who, by the way, don't share the profit they make with us, right? We're just the dumb investors. We pour in tax dollars, and they run off with the show. That's the basic story behind TIF. Of course, remember, when it started off, we understood that because we were trying to put it in economically declining parts of town. And I think, left or right, you could make an argument to the people of Kansas City and Missouri and say, we understand this may divert funds away from basic services, but we think it's worth it for the return. But in Kansas City, we give the money to anyone. Market distortion is we build a lot of bad ideas. The Power and Light District, I don't remember if I'm going to talk about this in the next few slides, but so a lot of the fans of TIF point to downtown and say, hey, Patrick, without all these subsidies, we'd still have warehouses down there, right? It would all be bad. Look at all the businesses and jobs we've created. Fair enough. So I talked to the folks at Regulated Industries, the liquor control people, And in Kansas City, we do a weird thing. We require anybody that works as a bartender or a waiter to spend money to get a health card. That's rare across the country, but we require it. And so I said to Liquor Control, send me the number of cards that have been in existence. I think they last for 3 years. For the last 10 years, right? What's the number you've had out there each year? And also share with me the number of liquor licenses you've given out to businesses over that same period. I don't have the chart here, I'm sorry, but the number has been flat. Absolutely flat in Kansas City. We may have created, I'm doing air quotes for those of you on the radio, we may have created business downtown, but that's simply because we've moved it from elsewhere in the city. There isn't any new job growth. There isn't any new revenue growth. We've simply said to businesses, we will incentivize you if you build here, and so they move there. H&R Block is the perfect example. We built them a world headquarters downtown, and they said they were going to create 1,600 new jobs, I believe is the number. They didn't create. They created, I think, 35 jobs since the 10 years since we gave it to them. They simply moved all their employees from elsewhere in the region into that building and said, there are new jobs here in this district. And unfortunately, people buy that, right? The head of the Economic Development Corporation of Kansas City believes that if we didn't subsidize Burns and Mac, they wouldn't have built a new world headquarter next to their existing world headquarter. Burns and Mac employees don't believe that. And it is absolutely unbelievable. But the way in which we give out money, the standards we have, allow people to make those claims. So I talk about here, you know, does KC stand for the king of cronyism? We've given money out to H&R Block, J.E. Dunn, Burns & McDonald, Cerner, to build their world headquarters. And I spoke recently to a chamber meeting, and a chamber centurions, and I said, if you work at any of those businesses, next time you go to work, please understand that that lobby you walk through was paid for by diverting money away from schools that serve poor public school children. They didn't like to hear that, but it is absolutely true. And I told you earlier, the Economic Development Corporation of Kansas City, the gatekeepers, are funded through fees generated by TIF. We talked about that already. So how do supporters respond? We've talked a little bit about this. Let me check my time. I've got a few minutes. Excellent. So we look at this and they say, well, Patrick, that green area, that's free money, right? If we'd left that land alone, if Beth Shalom were still vacant and sitting there, it would be generating no tax money for those jurisdictions. So really, have we done anything wrong? Have we taken any money from them? And the answer is certainly yes. Because when you institute a TIF, and this is something that even EDC people, Economic Development Corporation people, have said to me, and it is the common response. This is free money. We wouldn't be seeing any tax revenue from these vacant properties. But when we institute a TIF, we freeze the tax money they pay at a dollar amount. So the school districts, the libraries, don't even see any increases due to inflation. They would be getting more from those properties if they were vacant, right? And then, of course, they build. They build on it, and the property value goes up. But what that TIF research that I mentioned earlier, one report actually done by the Economic Corporation of St. Louis, which concluded all this money you're spending is doing nothing, what the research says is if you just stopped giving subsidies, Burns and Mac would have built anyway. They would have built their world headquarters anyway, and they would be paying taxes on that property that would go to the school district. If Cerner needs a new headquarters, they're going to build it anyway. And they're going to build it on land and pay taxes. And it's the same with H&R Block. If it makes sense, they're going to do it anyway. And again, the research demonstrates this. Sly James says, there is no bank where you walk in and there is a box that says school district money and you take it out and hand it to some developer. But I disagree. Absolutely, the school district is being hurt by the TIFs we give. And sometimes those but-for reports I talk about, even those will say that as a result of this construction, the school district will be out millions of dollars. So I've given you that answer. The research tells us, now this is a picture of Steve Rose telling me on Ruckus that I don't care what the research tells you. Steve Rose And folks in Overland Park are falling for this just as much as folks in Kansas City. They see a shopping center that wasn't there, right, before. They say, we gave a subsidy, now there's a building there, therefore the subsidy created the building. It's the most basic logical fallacy we have, but people believe it. And this is not just, you know, Steve dismisses us as some, you know, right-wing think tank. This is University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, the Upjohn Institute for Economic Research, the St. Louis Redevelopment Corporation have done these studies, and they find time again. UMKC has done a study on this and found time and again that TIF simply doesn't work. You don't need to take our word for it. So again, why the problems? The TIF process requires two findings, the blight and but-for, the loopholes, you could drive a truck through them. The standards are legalistic and largely meaningless. Remember Steve Potter saying that under Missouri law, you could blight the governor's mansion. And according to The Pitch, writing years ago, the TIF process is dominated by developers and their attorneys who dominate campaign contributions to elected officials. Steve Vockrott, when he wrote for The Pitch, I believe, did a great piece about our mayor having a fundraiser on Burns and Mac's old campus, collecting a whole bunch of money, by the way, from people who lived in Kansas, months before Burns and Mac actually even asked for the subsidy. And what's funny is the mayor endorsed the plan before the plan was submitted to the TIF Commission. I think what happens is folks like you and I, people who run businesses, small businesses, storefronts, we're not eligible for these subsidies, but if you're big and you're connected, you get them time and again. We've talked about blight, and we've talked about but-for analysis. We talked about the H&R Block headquarters there. Does it work? And I go into a little bit more detail. Like, people of Kansas City are going to be subsidizing this construction for 23 years, and I maintain it has done absolutely nothing. All the H&R Block jobs in that building existed before the subsidy. They simply moved them across town. This is the chart of liquor cards and licenses. So you'll see far to the left there, that's the line where we started building the Power and Light District, or actually where the Power and Light District opened. And the top line are those number of employee liquor cards, and the bottom line are the liquor licenses they give out to stores, and you can see it's flat. If we actually created something new, those numbers would go up. And they're not. They're flat because we didn't create anything new. We just shuffled the cards around. Westport took a hit. Maybe Waldo took a hit. And businesses moved up to Power and Light District. And you know what? They'd be fools not to because they're getting subsidies. And let me say one more thing. I make fun of Burns and Mac and H&R Block and Cerner and stuff like that. I wish these guys wouldn't take the subsidies, but they'd be fools not to. Businesses have a fiduciary responsibility to take care of their owners and their shareholders. And if the city is going to offer you a sweetheart deal like this, I absolutely recommend you take it. I just wish that cities would be less likely to play the fool. I live in Waldo. The Ward Parkway Shopping Center is building a bunch of restaurants on the south end. I guess they've opened now. I haven't been. And when I first heard about it, I called the representative of the developers and I asked, are you getting any subsidies? I had already called the TIF Commission. They hadn't applied for any. I said to the guy, are you getting any subsidies? He said, no. I said, why not? He said, well, we didn't think it was blighted. And I said, you know, that doesn't matter, right? And I worried for months. I worried for months that I had somehow tipped these guys off that they could get free money. But good for them. They built. They thought it was the right thing. And so if you go to the Ward Parkway Shopping Center, you can know that all your tax revenue, except for the CID, we can talk about that later, except for 1%, goes to the city to pay for the services we depend on. That's, for some reason, the same chart. So what can we do about it? I am as optimistic. Working in this job, I describe myself sometimes as becoming a cynic on government, right? I always believe the worst, yet sometimes I find that I still manage to be naive. I am optimistic that there are real opportunities for reform. We could reform the definition of blight so that it not just looks at that parcel of property, but it looks at the property, unemployment rate in the neighborhood around that parcel, and it looks at poverty in the property around that parcel to say, is this really a blighted area? Georgia adopted a reform to TIF where they looked at infant mortality before they would give developers TIF. And I thought, I don't know if that's a good idea, but I thought that's creative thinking. They are really trying to make sure that their subsidies go where development is needed. You might, for example, cap the amount of assessed value a city can TIF out each year. I kind of like that because rather than just say yes to everybody, let's get the two development lawyers, Dave Francais and Jerry Riffle, let's get them in front of the city council to argue with each other. If we say you can only get X amount of dollars, let's let the developers make the case over who ought to get that money rather than just saying yes to everyone. Again, redefine blight, use third-party analysis for our cost-benefit for our but-for analysis rather than just having the developer say, no, I totally need this. Maybe we have shorter periods of abatements for TIF. What they do in Kansas, I believe, the school district has the ability to veto. So they may have a minority vote on the TIF commission, but they can stop it. That might be, since the school districts have as more exposure than anyone else to TIF, maybe we just allow them to opt out. Thank you very much. I'm happy to take any questions that you have.
And I want to thank Linda for bringing this to us. This was excellent. And we're going to have questions, but not statements. And if you'd like to have a statement, you can come to the library. Patrick will be with us in the library for a while to hear statements and other questions that don't get answered today.
Yeah, what members of the city council or other politicians locally have you posed these arguments to, and how have they responded to those?
So I have for years tried to talk about it. I'll be honest with you. Sometimes legislators see the Show Me Institute coming and they just bury their head in their books. They don't want to hear anything we have to say. And sometimes, you know, we deserve that. I have found some council members to be receptive to this. Quentin Lucas and the current council really, I think, made a good, a well-intended effort to reform TIF. To maybe say that developers don't get to keep all the money, the increment, the increase. But I understand secondhand that effort, through no intention of Councilman Lucas himself, is so riddled with loopholes that the city feels that it is meaningless. It certainly hasn't been enacted yet. It has so many opt-outs and meanings, loopholes in it that I don't think the city has I don't think it's a real disincentive. Another problem with TIF is it is an equal opportunity. Republicans and Democrats are just as bad on this. So I am hopeful that the legislature will consider this, but it is because urban legislators in St. Louis and Kansas City see that their districts are being ignored. And kind of ideological conservatives who just think that this is corporate welfare and we ought not be doing it. And frankly, an opportunity to close tax loopholes. It may be those two groups that kind of work together. Those are the groups that have approached us about this. So I'm optimistic, but I think at the city level, the incentive is too great because when you're a politician, what do you want to do at the end of your term? You want to point to something. Look what I built. I built a hotel. I built an airport. I built an entertainment district. Yes, sir.
You seem to mostly have focused on, large development projects from individual people rather than look at serial TIF of users such as Walmart.
That's right.
Which seems to be that in their business plan is we get TIF, we stay here. The day that it's up, we're moving to another place in order to create a blighted area where we now leave our store and go build a new one. Have you done much work as far as the incidents where TIF is causing blighted areas?
Well, that's a great question. So the problem with that is the standard of blight is so empty that it's hard to know because people in Kansas City, we blight greenfields up north. I mean, and we blight it because it doesn't have any infrastructure. Well, of course it doesn't have any infrastructure. It's a field. But So it's hard for us to say is an area more blighted or less. You are absolutely right. There are retail shops that are serial TIF abusers. In fact, it seems to me, I live in Waldo, and they were tearing down a school right on Warnell, the name of which I forget, and at some point Walmart had wanted to put in a grocery store, not a huge center, but a small grocery store. And because of Walmart's reputation, the neighborhood kind of rose up against that. And Walmart's selling point was, well, we're not asking for any subsidies. And I thought to myself, how hilarious is it when a business's selling point is, we're going to pay for this ourselves? I mean, that you're supposed to. That's what businesses do. You invest, you take the risk, and you reap the reward. However, I think that the bigger ones, Walmart may do it all over, and it's, I could talk more about what I've seen in smaller towns in Missouri who are desperately afraid of kind of drying up and blowing away. And so when a retailer like Walmart comes to them and says, we're going to build a store here, they fall over themselves. They don't want it to go to the town next to them. And so they get in this kind of bidding war to give away money. And you're all aware of the stories about Walmart and Raytown, right? How they don't pay any property tax, yet they're the number one source of police calls. So they're using city resources, but they're not contributing to city coffers. Yes, that absolutely happens. As to whether or not a store like that takes a piece of property that wasn't blighted and it's blighted afterwards, that's certainly a reasonable argument to make. The problem is they would have had to have find blight in the first place to get the subsidy. So you end up comparing more or less blighted, and I wish that we would just clean up those definitions so it actually means what you and I think. Yes, sir.
Good morning, Patrick. If logic carried the day, we'd be talking about something different. I think you and I know that, and perhaps is it nowhere more evident than in the ongoing saga of the airport. So I guess my question goes to you, with your Show Me Institute hat on. Isn't there a new vector in all of this that comes back to voter participation? We've seen the ups and downs of petitions. We now have the mayor mad at everybody on the city council because they're all backstabbing. We have an election coming up for a new mayor, and half the people on the council are in the vote. So how do we bring the reality that politicians don't seem to be incentivized by the voters to think and act logically? Where do we see places where maybe that isn't the problem? How do we get at something other than the numbers being the cause when in reality it's the symptom?
I know you guys aren't probably accustomed to hearing a lot of Antonin Scalia quotes from up here, but Antonin Scalia had a great quote. He said he wanted a rubber stamp that said stupid but constitutional. And ultimately that's the problem, right? What's the quote? Is it H.L. Mencken who said, democracy makes sure that the people get exactly what they deserve, or something like that? You know, if we continue to vote for politicians who spend our money this way, then we will continue to get this. And I don't know that I would suggest anything else. I mean, frankly, what would I rather do? Have a benign dictatorship from up high? Well, no, but that is true of all sorts of things. So people don't turn out, people don't understand. TIF is used as a way to say, well, look at these pretty buildings. They're here because we gave out subsidies. I think ultimately, I think the bigger problem in municipalities in Missouri is, and maybe you ask this at the forum, when you run for city council, what do you think your job is? If you ask me, I will tell you their job is to cut the grass and to fix the sidewalks. But they don't think of it that way. They think their job is to build huge buildings and subsidize developers. And to use a baseball analogy, I would argue that Kansas City needs to keep government efficient and cheap and kind of keep the line moving, right? But the too many city council members want to swing for the fences. We think that if we build a new convention hotel, we'll take off. If we build a new airport, we'll really take off. But really, what makes government attractive to business is that they are small and efficient and quick. And aside, you know that Kansas City, Missouri did not win Google Fiber. Kansas City, Kansas won Google Fiber years ago. And the reason they gave for choosing Kansas City, Kansas, despite the fact that Kansas City, Missouri had offered all sorts of federal loans and all sorts, they said Kansas City, Kansas has an efficient, unified government in a business-friendly state. That's what we need to do. Rather than tax one business, to pay for the subsidies we're giving another business. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, hi. A year or two ago, City Manager Schulte was here talking to us and defended or promoted the TIF here in our town as advantageous in the long term. Increased property values, schools and libraries would gain from that. I know I left really concerned about TIF. I did not buy what City Manager was saying at all. But on the needed reforms, you said up there, as a reform, public schools and probably libraries could opt out. And I don't know what that means. If,
sure.
if that is one reform that could occur, what would that be?
So my understanding, and I don't cover Kansas, so pardon my ignorance in advance, but my understanding of the way it works in Kansas is you have a TIF commission, and it, the city and the county and the school districts have representatives. But because the largest portion of the subsidy comes from money that would go to schools, the school district can veto it. Now, that doesn't put an end to TIF. But what that does do is make sure that the developer makes the school district happy. So maybe the developer will do other things that will make, you know, this, it's not maybe just a matter of bottom line. Or maybe the developer will say, well, we will pay for some of the improvement to a school nearby, or we'll make public amenities available on the land we're developing. I don't know all the various ways, but what it allows, it gives the school district a voice. And it gives them a voice more than just the one of 11 votes. It, what happens all the time here in Kansas City is the mayor's six vote the way the mayor wants, and the remaining five representing schools and libraries just lose. And to put a fine point on that, Phil Glenn, who's running for mayor, was on the TIF commission, was a mayoral appointee to the TIF commission, voted not to oppose Shirley Helzberg's TIF of in the Crossroads, but simply voted to delay so that the developer and the school district had more time to talk. Well, the mayor removed him from the TIF commission and replaced him with somebody else. So I think we need to mix that up and give the people who have the most exposure to TIF a greater voice.
Does Mid-America Regional Council, or if you know other similar institutions in other metropolitan areas in the U.S., do they play a role in talking about the impact on TIF on a metropolitan area, or how it would best be structured by the various pieces that might have one?
That's a good question. My short answer is I don't know. I know that oftentimes the Mid-America Regional Council, or MARC, M-A-R-C, will provide guidelines or vision for what we ought to have in a city. You know, we want dense urban areas. We want maybe less sprawl. I think those objectives probably drive TIF, right? You know, for example, the city council wants to, and I talked about this at the beginning, cities have been flat or dying in some cases, and so city governments are struggling to bring people back into their urban core. Kansas City is not unique. And so what they do is they constantly subsidize. Anybody who wants to build downtown, we're happy to do it. So I think MARC may have a role in kind of setting the big vision that then cities react to use TIF to try to implement. But ultimately, the best way to do this is to allow free people to act freely. And if people choose to live in the suburbs around cities and not in the cities, the best thing a city can do is react to that. Build for the city you have, not the city you want. And too often, cities build for the city they want. They imagine this city 75 years from now, and here are the needs we're going to have in 75 years. The mayor has said that the streetcar is for people who live here in 75 years. The problem is, in building for the city that we think we might have in 75 years, we can't provide for the city we have right now. And so I would argue, again, council members should be cutting the grass and fixing the sidewalks and leaving the big ideas to private developers.
Thank you. At this time, I get the privilege of offering our honorarium of the Forum coffee cup.
Thank you so much.
And one of the That was really quite wonderful. Well, thank you for coming. He will be in the library for a little bit to talk about what he's just talked about and maybe answer some questions that were not asked. So thank you and please feel free to stay for the service.
Thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed tonight's presentation, Good Governance versus Gimmickry in Kansas City, Missouri with Patrick Tuohy. This program was recorded on Sunday, December 27th at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church. All Souls Forum is edited and produced for broadcast by Christina Frazier. Our theme song was composed, performed, and recorded by musician Fred Potter. This program will be available for podcast within one day of broadcast on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. Remember, you can also find archived All Souls podcasts and many other interesting and enlightening public affairs programs produced by KKFI on the KKFI website. Thanks for joining us this evening, and we hope you tune in next week, same time, same place, when we will continue the conversation here at 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio station.